This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conquest3 on Twitter. And I'm here with Wheelie Dealer, at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. This is Twin Peaks Investing Podcast number 81. And it's the 9th of August and it's currently 10 to 6, nearly 6 p.m. in the UK. Hi, Pete. And how are you today, mate? And how's the markets been treating you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay. You know, it's I'm doing all right. Markets have been funny. I was saying to you before we started the call, it's been a funny sort of period for the last few weeks. I think it's very much low volumes, low summer volumes, I think is what's causing it. And we're just getting, I think we're getting that classic melt up, if you like, the drift up, where, you know, there's just a lot of volatility, no conviction behind anything. Stuff is just sort of drifting upwards. Yesterday, the NASDAQ is dropping off a bit as we speak. But there's been so much of this in the last couple of weeks. And tomorrow it'll be up. You know, you just never know from one day to the next what it's going to do. And it just feels that sort of weird summer lull, really.
Yeah, you said that thing about low volume. I think that's exactly what's going on. Lots of big movements regarding stocks. And if they're in favour, they're going to really, really soar and pop. Mm. And if they're not, and they come out with any sort of muted sort of the words challenging, or we're lowering our expectations, then, you know, they're going to get absolutely smashed. I think what we've said is that there's going to be more takeovers, which I'll talk about in a little while, but also lots more profit warnings if they don't sort themselves out. So that's what the markets are doing. They're just moving up and down. But the trend seems to have been up because we're sitting here today. We've just closed. FTSE 100 is at 7488 and touched 7504 today. That was the intraday high today, which is quite good considering all the noise and all the negativity that's going on in the market. FTSE 250, just shy of 20,000. So it's at 19,912. And that was down just 1% today. FTSE All Share sitting at 4,129. That was essentially flat today. FTSE AIM down 0.5% at 914. Currently, as we speak, obviously the Dow Jones and the US markets are still open. Dow Jones sitting at 32,786, down 0.14%. S&P 4,116, down 0.5%. And NASDAQ at 12,448, down 1.5%. And it seems to be the tech heavy or tech related stocks that are moving around with more and more and more severity and volatility. And they're going to be the ones that either wag the market or force the market lower or higher, depending on which ones are saying which, you know.
Yeah, that seems to be what's going on. I'm finding the FTSE 100 quite fascinating, partly because I've got a hedge. You know, I'm short on the FTSE 100 and have been for quite a long time, which is not very comfortable. But what's interesting, if you look over, let's say, 7-8 months, you've had this situation where we've had loads of sort of real steep climbs and then really severe falls. Steep climb, severe fall. Steep climb, severe fall. And we're doing a steep climb again. And when you look at the it's the steepness of the climb. It's that angle. When you look at it, it's basically just gone straight up for, I don't know, for maybe a month or something, yeah? And every single time that's happened, it's run out of puff just over 7.6, about 7.640. Now, if a FTSE 100 can break out over 7.640, 7.650, that would suggest it's going to run higher. Personally, I think that's very unlikely. I think it will get up maybe a little bit higher, get nearer that 7.6, and I think we'll see it drop down again, especially as we start coming into the autumn with all the horrendous news that's around.
Yeah, I think what I mentioned to you last time about being really concerned about the markets actually just wading through the treacle and going higher. We were around the 7,600 mark when we were live on here, and the Fed did their announcement and the actual markets just took off. That was that live when we were tracking the Fed movement that day. Yeah. 7,600, and you were thinking about going long, and then within a couple of days you decided to go short. But I think I have to agree with you regarding that 7,600 sort of metric. If it does manage somehow to get through that, through all of the noise and all of the grief, then it could carry on for a little while longer, because the FOMO institutions and retail investors will be thinking, oh, I've missed out. They're all moving now. Let me get some money in the market. But there's so much negativity coming down the pipe regarding
everything:
food inflation, energy inflation, companies coming out with data post the summer months, which we're going to be having, because a lot of the data coming out now is up to June, up to May, up to whatever. So we're going to get the data coming up for trading updates for post June. So June, July, August, September. We've got that to come in the next quarter.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of companies are going to either be saying, we're good, we're all right, we've got through it, we've made plans, we organized ourselves, we edged our energy costs, we edged this, we edged that, we've done all this, we're going to be fine. And there's going to be other companies going, we've not managed to hedge, we didn't hedge, and we've not managed to pass our costs on to our customers. Sorry, but here we are, and we're telling you, you've got a profit warning.
And we're seeing exactly that already. I mean, I've read loads of reports in recent weeks where the companies are being able to raise prices. In fact, that's another linked issue that I've seen a lot of comments around saying that companies are actually finding they can raise prices quite easily. Now, that's a little bit scary, because that suggests that customers are very accepting of higher prices. And that's not necessarily a good thing anyway. But the other point was that what is happening, there's a lag in those price increases. So the companies are getting hit with higher input costs, but their plans to raise the output price to their end customer are sort of behind it. So you're getting this squeeze to margins in the meantime. But then you get other companies, and I got a feeling Zotefoams, ZTF, was one today that I think had said it had managed to pass all its costs on, no worries at all. And, that's impressive, as to whether Zotefoam is worth buying, I'm not so sure, but that's another issue. But just the fact that they could get, they could pass the costs on was pretty impressive. They've done well. You've got to hand them for that.
Yeah, I think their shares popped today. When I was looking earlier on, they're up a good plus 14% at one stage today. So that was a really, really good move on their part. And they've been drifting lower and lower and lower. So that was quite good for them to get some positive news out. And hopefully that will calm their share price. Talking about costs and everything, though, Pete, what I wanted to touch on here, and we mentioned this all the way back at the beginning, almost the beginning of the year now, when this thing kicked off with Russia and the Ukraine, and we talked about energy costs, we talked about inflation, we talked about gas prices and the prices at the pump. And it's one of them things where, it's just now coming out that the concerns even more so are coming out, and it's in the press and it's being talked about more. And this is for everyone to actually ever think about, because the news today is essentially that most people's, or the average energy bill for a household, is going to be £4,500. Now, if you think about that and just average it down and square it a little bit, that's £400 per month, right? For most people that were paying on average between 80 and possibly £140, depending on the size of your household, to then jump another £300 to £400 a month. I don't know how many people can manage that, Pete.
It's crazy.
We're talking about fuel poverty and food poverty and fuel poverty. We're going to have a really, really difficult time.
Yeah.
As consumers, and some people in our community are going to have really, really difficult times going forward, mate. Especially when it comes to October, November, December are cold months, and you've got to put the heating on, and you've got to have a shower, and you've got to put, you know, petrol in your car, or little old days in their houses on their own are going to be thinking, well, what do? I eat something, or do I put the heating on?
I mean, it's really scary, because I mean, I was sort of doing a rough calculation of where I live in a 2-bedroom bungalow, right? I probably have some extra cost because of my paraplegia and stuff, but generally speaking, I'm probably quite representative. I'm not obsessive about not using gas and electric, but I'm reasonably sensible about it, you know. But I reckon my normal energy costs for a year for gas and electric is probably about 15% below that price cap thing that's announced. And they were talking about sort of 3,200 for the average household in November, in October. Then I think it was it 4.5 or 4.6 or something potentially in January. Yeah. Now the thing is, that's for an average house. Now someone like your good self in your massive great mansion with all your children and all your wives, you know, your bill is going to be, your bill is going to be 20 grand, mate. I mean, yeah. Seriously, what do you think your bill will be? I mean, how does it sort of stack up, do you think?
I fixed mine, Pete, a little while ago. So I'm all right until, I think it's, where are we now? It'll be March 24. I'm fixed still.
Oh, that's so brilliant. That's brilliant.
I work with numerous charities and other people, mate, and I've been trying to encourage everybody that was there and I've been involved in to fix their bills as best they possibly can.
Yeah.
And this was going back to January, February, March. I was trying to encourage people to do that. Some of them didn't. And they're coming back now saying, is it too late? Can I do this? Can I do that? And I'm going, well, it's not too late. But the thing is that the prices that you're now being quoted are significantly higher to what you were able to do in January and February and March.
I mean, the fixes have gone absolutely bonkers.
When people went to look at them in January and February, it was already going like that, Pete.
Yeah.
And it's a case of, well, that can't be right. I'm not going to do it. But if you had done it, it's now, you know, you'd been okay because it's now gone up another grand or two grand. And it's like, some people haven't got that, simply have not got that money, Pete. Yeah. There's now a movement of not paying your bill, cancelling your direct debits, not paying your bill. Now, my concerns with that, with anybody, is
not a good idea. Not a good idea.
And then you've got the bailiffs knocking on your door, or someone comes and cuts the power off. Because some of these energy companies don't give a damn.
Well, even before that, they could put you on a key meter. And the sheer hassle, it's more expensive on a key meter, which never makes any sense anyway. But it's also the hassle. You've got to keep recharging the key and all this rubbish. I mean, God, you know, that really doesn't sound a very bright idea. Anyway, I mean, on a slightly positive note, if you like, hard to find any, it looks pretty nailed on that whoever is the future Prime Minister, Sunak or Truss, most likely Truss, it looks like they're going to do something in terms of some sort of help to relieve some of the pressure. But of course, that is just stoking up more problems for the country in the future as we go into more debt and all the rest of it. So, yeah, it's not a pretty picture anywhere.
The thing for me is, right, all the press I can see is saying that Liz Truss is going to be the person that is going to be the next Prime Minister, right? Which is fine and fair enough. They've got to choose somebody, you know, and you know, there's lots of ridicule being thrown her way and ridicule being thrown Rishi's way. The fact remains is that we're in a situation where we've had various governments over the past 40 years, right, could have put together and planned strategically as to how we're able to be energy sufficient on this little island called, you know, the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Great Britain, whatever you want to call it. So we're now sitting here going, we're stuffed. Energy prices are going up threefold because we've got no energy. We might have to ration stuff come October, December, January, February. Or we might have to hand out £100. Might have to hand out £400. Might have to hand £500. Now, £500 will probably cover someone's bill for 2 months, Pete. given what we're saying the prices are going to be.
Oh yeah.
What happens to the other, £3,000 they're going to pay between now and this next August? Mm. Who's going to give them that? So you're going to get people in debt, and then you're going to get people going out committing crime, you know, because they're paying for the heating, so they're going to rob food, right?
Oh,
so and this the number of food banks around the country is going through the roof.
Yeah.
Right. It's almost like a middle class crisis. There were people before that were poor, and they're just about getting by. But now you've got people that are actually working. Pete, I'm not joking. You've got firemen, policemen, teachers, nurses, you name it, public sector workers, yeah, that are actually going to food banks. Got no choice but to go to food banks, and that's the disgrace of it all. It's not about living in London. It's not about living in Glasgow. It's not about living in Bolton. It's not about living in Oldham. It's not about living in Leicester. There's people up and down this country, and every single postcode. Going to an effing food bank. Oh, that's the disgrace of it all.
It's just insane. Apparently, there's hospitals and whatever have actually got food banks to give food to nurses.
I tweeted about this months ago, mate.
Yeah.
It's going to get worse. It's going to be worst.
I heard today that apparently, I'm not sure whether it's the median or the mean, but the average salary in the UK is about £30,000 a year. Now, before all these problems with energy, the average spend before on the before taxed income of £30,000, the average spend on energy was 5%. It's now going to be 20%. I mean, this is just absolutely insane numbers. So that when I heard that, I was like, wow, that is. And you think a young person, yeah, you know, they come out of college, they've got to pay for their education and stuff on their debts. They've got unbelievable levels of rent for property. If they were lucky enough to manage to get on the housing ladder, you know, the mortgage is going to be going up. So that's going to get them. And then they're being hit for these energy costs. And we haven't even talked about petrol. And, you know, it's all just, something that I read today is an article by Alex Hamer, which is in Investors Chronicle from this week. And it was talking there about how they're really in America. Yeah. The American big oil companies. And I think this is applying as well across the world. I think it's UK ones and European ones as well. They are really wary of investing too much to produce more oil and gas, because they're worried about the oil price and the gas price crashing again and getting them in the mess they were in a couple of years ago. I think that was a very scary time for executives of big oil companies, right? So what's happening is that instead of investing more money in infrastructure to get more oil and more gas out and get the price down to help us all, what's actually happening is that the money being, they're prioritizing shareholder returns, basically. So that's where the money's going. And you just think, this is all just completely insane. We're doing the opposite on everything that we should be doing. It's like, yeah, we can have an argument about the green thing, but at the end of the day, the reality on the ground now and in the next couple of years is we need more oil and gas. Otherwise, everyone's going to be in poverty. It doesn't matter whether you save the planet if everyone's living like a caveman. I mean, it's completely nuts.
I'm going to linger on this too much, Pete, because it's quite depressing.
It's
but I think there's going to be a few.
But it ties up
to march on number 10 and other places going forward, because Liz Truss is going to be basically gaining and inheriting an absolute mess. And
why would you want to do
it at Boris's door? And you can't put all this blame at Rishi's door. This is decades of inefficiencies that have been allowed to neglect, infrastructure neglect that's been allowed to happen. You know, this is decades of stuff. This is not just about Russia.
Yeah.
This is not just about, you know, what's going on regarding inflation. This is decades of neglect, mate.
Well, it's also
both parties that have been responsible for it in the past, Tories and Labour, they could have put things in place to make sure that they had a plan and a strategy and a plan A, B, C, and D. None. And what do we do? All right, you know what we'll do? We'll throw £500 each at those that are in need going forward this winter. That doesn't address it, Pete.
Not at all. Where it gets interesting, I'll link to what we were discussing earlier about the markets. you know, so often we have an autumn sell-off where we get a real drop in the markets. And I think with this kind of backdrop, we have a bit of a rally through the summer. It's a perfect setup as we get into autumn. I've seen it start loads of times towards late August into September, October. You can quite often get a hefty drop. So I don't, you know, if that happens, don't be surprised.
Yeah, that's very true, mate. Very true indeed.
Mate, let me talk about something a bit lighter.
Go for it.
Unless you've got another point you want to add there.
No, mate, we've been lingering on. We spoke too long about that, so let's move on.
We've even bored ourselves. Right.
One last thing. Please go and check if you can, if there's still time, if you can fix and it's not too expensive. It's moved on a little bit. And my concern is that we're going to see more and more people, even the FinTwitters, going, look at that, I've just reviewed my bill. And it's like that. And it's just, wow. I think we're going to see more of that going forward on Twitter because people are going to be shocked.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. What I wanted to mention first was just to highlight again that ShearPad are doing a special deal where you can get 25% off for the first 6 months. Now, it only applies to ShearPad, not to ShareScope. If you go to my website, www.wheeliedealer.weebly.co.uk or whatever it is, on the homepage, massive writing, it tells you exactly what to do to take advantage of the offer. And it basically involves putting a Twin Peaks code into the promotional box. But you must follow exactly those things. Don't use any of the other links, because you won't get the 25% offer. That runs until the 31st of August. So get in and take advantage. Pete, where can they find it on your website or whatever?
Yeah, it's on my website. It's just basically you just type in ShareScope offer on my website, or you find it in my news articles. And there's a flashing GIF GIF on the Twitter, on my Twitter feed, which is just going like that, bang, 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 talking about the actual link and the story too, and what they're celebrating for 25 years and the offer. So you can find it there in a similar sort of place. Yeah?
Excellent.
Right, Pete, I want to talk about the first stock.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
Do you want to go first, or do you want me to go?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll talk in a general sense about a couple of stocks. This is not a recommendation. This is the opposite of a recommendation. Today, Nexus Infrastructure, NEXS, came out with a bit of a profit warning. They do connections for gas, electric, whatever, at the home and all this kind of stuff. And they also apparently are moving into installing electric cars, EV charging points. They're down 10% today. They basically said some delays in customers placing orders. And they also said, they were having trouble getting some supplies for some of the more technical pieces of equipment. I'd imagine that's around the EV charging points and stuff. They're probably finding there's so much demand for them that you can't get the bits. So but my point is that it's a classic challenge with flotations and IPOs, because Nexus listed about, I don't know, a couple of years ago, and before that you had Fulcrum Utility, FCRM, which is very similar business that also floated a little bit before. Yeah. Now, on the face of it, they look really good businesses. And with the house building situation, where lots of houses were being built over recent years and are probably going to need to be built in coming years, you'd have thought they'd be good investments, but they've turned out to be absolute pigs. And I think, again, it's one of these things where it's the uncertainty of the markets. It's like, however much you research and you investigate and whatever, you will still get caught out. It's absolutely inevitable. So you have to have strategies like diversification. You have to have a strategy like, you might sell on the first profit warning, or you might have a 15%, 20% stop loss. But it's certainly worth thinking about what do I do when the best idea I've ever had actually goes wrong? And it's, and again, it comes back to IPOs. IPOs so often can be a nightmare.
Yeah, I think the concerning thing is that, you know, you mentioned the housing infrastructure and the electric charging points. It's meant to be, and we're talking about the energy situation just now, it's meant to be planning and organizing and putting the infrastructure in for the future, right? And what's happening with a lot of these companies now is that actually the cost of actually putting this together and going forward has accelerated beyond what they planned. Extrapolated. I can't even say the word, Pete. Yeah.
You're close.
The cost to be this, yeah, to go forward. And the price and the profitability and the margins were, yeah, tickety-boo. And then what happens? 2022, all of those plans have gone out the window because the costs for the team, for staffing, for energy, for logistics, for getting the raw materials from all around the world, I just gone like that. Absolutely. And then the companies that are actually made the orders and the local authorities that possibly made the orders have gone, well, can you come back to us in 6 months? I know we've already ordered it, but can we delay it for 6 months? Because our budget's been thrown out the window. So can we come back to us in 6 months' time or a year's time or next year? Or just simply, we're not doing it now.
You know, true.
And those revenues have, some of them have been booked as well, on the books. It's like, yeah, we won a contract, bush, won, you know, and they've been taken as almost as if they've made the profit. Now those are being pulled. So Nexus, Fulcrum, all the rest of it, mate, infrastructure-wise, we should be investing. But the problem is that now people are reining in their spends because they've got other priorities now. So lots of stuff are going to be delayed. And electric vehicles, as you know, I'm exposed to that via all the lithium stocks that I've got. That's where the money is meant to be going, into EVs and charging. And 2030, we're going to reduce that and we're going to stop, you know, petrol-driven cars here, and we're going to stop diesel cars later on, and so on and so on and so on and so forth. That's 8 years away, Pete. So how long is it going to take us to put the infrastructure in if we do go down that route? It's going to take 8 years. So you should be planning and putting it in now.
Well, it's like President, just this week, over the weekend, whatever it was, President Biden had a bit of a win for him, really, because he's managed to get this infrastructure. Well, it's, what is it called? I love the names of American law. So this one's called something like the U.S. Inflation Annihilation Bill or something. You know, it's got some ridiculous name.
I'm not
there.
Quite sure you had annihilation in it, Pete.
No, but you know what I mean? They always have really bizarre names. Anyway, on this particular one, they've agreed to this as part of the inflation thing to combat inflation.
Yeah.
I haven't quite made the connection between the inflection and the inflation and the green infrastructure side of things. But anyway, what they're talking about is that by 2030, I reckon this bill by 2030 will reduce US emissions by 40%. Now, you think about it, that's 8 years. I mean, it'll take them a year to get the bloody bill through all the machinations of the political systems and stuff. Mm-hmm. And as you said, you know, getting the actual money to a shovel-ready project and then having the steel, the manpower, the components, all the stuff that's needed, you just think, yeah, right, you've got absolutely no hope of it in 2030, mate.
And again, it goes back to what I was saying a bit earlier, Pete. It's about the neglect regarding infrastructure. They have to be in a situation where they almost get to a point where a lot of the neglect they've had from the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and now they're in the zeros, they start to build in their infrastructure. They've got crumbling bridges and they've got, you know, roads that are falling apart. And you go out of the main cities and honestly, you're going, whoa, where am I? I'm in the 1960s or the 70s. It's just pure neglect. This is the US. And what I'm saying is that occasionally
we have a similar problem here. Yeah.
And that's what I'm getting to. Yeah. Occasionally you go down the odd road in the UK and you're going, crikey, this is a vile road, isn't it? It's got potholes everywhere. But that's almost rare these days.
Yeah.
But it's not so in the US. Some of the roads are just dirt roads, mate.
When I was a kid, right, and we are talking very young, because we've got my parents had a photo of me with our little dog Judy, which was a little dog I remember from when I was about 4 or something. You know, this is a long time ago, right? So it would have been about 1969, 1970. There's a photo, me, my mum and dad, and my brother, who's a couple of years older. It's his birthday yesterday, actually. And basically, we were walking where they were actually digging to build the M4 motorway. So wow. The M4 runs between sort of London and goes down to like Wales or something. Yeah, Severn Bridge or something, wherever it is, up down to Bristol sort of way. Anyway, so they were building this motorway thing. And we are, you know, that was in the days you could just go and walk on a building site. I mean, it's completely insane when you think about it.
Up to safety.
Yeah. But what amazes me is, you know, that was sort of, let's say 1970. So we're talking sort of like 50 odd years ago. But the point is, a lot of those concrete bridges and things that we used to play on as kids, you know, these, once they were built, you know, when I was like, you know, 10 or something, we'd be out playing on all these bridges and things. And, you know, they are now getting very old and very tired. They're all cement, you know, concrete, yeah, reinforced with steel. But you can see it with them. I mean, even when I was walking 20 odd years ago, I used to go and walk around some of those bridges, and you could see then how they were starting to crumble and the rust and stuff. So I think we're going to be getting a very similar infrastructure problem, you know, for ourselves.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
I absolutely agree with you, mate. And this is the problem with all the thing that's going on. That takes me actually quite nicely onto one of the builder companies, Pete. And Bellway came out with their trading update today, reassuring, really. Posted a further increase in operating margin due to site efficiencies and competitions for more recently acquired land. And basically, the new build seems to be coming to living costs. So there's a dip in their sales regarding that. But strong demand essentially across the country. Pete, revenues for the year for a builder, you know, right now, climbed 13% to 3.5 billion. And a new record of completions, Pete, of 11,198 homes was also a new company record. Average selling prices were up 2.6%. So I just thought that was really good for a builder, because we've had lots of noise about the builders not being able to pass on the cost, but get the supply they needed to actually build houses.
Yeah.
You know, I had a chat with Henry, who's obviously involved in the construction industry, or he was previously more so. But he was saying, and I was saying, you know, what about all the suppliers and supply chains gone out the window? But they seem to be dealing with it. You know, the larger you are, I think the better you better your supply chain is going to be. So Bellway have done well today, came up with some good results. I think they seem to have calmed the housing stocks a little bit.
Well, I think in general, pretty much all of the housing stocks have come out with reasonably solid results, and they all seem to be able, you know, they're getting more for the increase in house price to sell it than they are for the cost inflation. So they're all to be doing all right. And as we've said many a time, you know, there is such a demand for housing in this country, and I can't see that going away.
The only caveat, Pete, is that if you look at the sector as a whole regarding the housing stocks,
it's been
the listed shares, they haven't done very well.
No, you're
despite being profitable, despite paying quite good dividends, the share prices have drifted somewhat, because I think everyone's already pricing in that less people are going to be moving in the next 6 months because of the you know, the cost of living crisis as per se. Will people stop buying houses? It's a possibility. Will the rich that are rich will keep on buying houses, and the poor will not be buying houses?
Well, I think you've got this weird situation going on in the market, and it's pertained for a while now, where what is happening is that transaction volumes have slumped. So people aren't moving house, transactions have reduced. But the problem is there are still people who want to buy, and there are still people who want to sell. But the problem is there isn't the supply of selling properties. And this is artificially driving the prices up. And I think the way things are carrying on, and if you think about it, with work from home, there is less need to now move house. You know, if you're in a situation, whereas before you'd have to move house because you've got a job 300 miles away, you had to move house. Now you can have a job 300 miles away and you can think, well, I'd like to move house, but I can't really afford to. I'm a bit worried about the environment. Yeah. I'll just stay here for a bit. And it just reduces the supply. So I think it's a really, I mean, everybody is saying house prices are going to fall. Will they? Who knows? It would not surprise me if they don't. Forecast, if you look at Bellway, BWY, on SharePad, at a price of $22.88, it's showing forecast dividend 5.9%, rising to 6.2%. That is sort of typical for house builders. I think some of them are giving slightly more. So I think really as a stock, that if you want a stock that's going to pay a dividend, maybe there's risk around your capital to an extent. It's not as safe and boring as a healthcare stock or something, but they've got good yields, and I think they're probably worth holding as part of a diversified portfolio just for that yield, really.
Yeah, we've got some good ones out there, I think, some solid companies. I think it's definitely a sector, as and when we come out of this, to consider and to do the research now and set yourself a sort of like a benchmark of price. Say if the share price goes to there, or if it starts to pop and break out, I'll look to buy it. But I think the thing is, what I keep saying to people is have a consideration regarding stocks you want to buy, create your watch list, keep an eye on them. Yeah. And then think about, well, you know what? I don't know what's going to happen to the markets over the next 3 months, 6 months or 9 months. But if I'm going to buy this stock, because it's got recurring revenues, because it's got a juicy dividend, or whatever the reasons are you found, having done your own research on the stock, you haven't followed X, Y, and Z on Twitter or waited for an article to be posted on that magazine or that paper. You've done your own research. You know the reasons why you want to own that stock, right? If you're going to go and buy it, you don't have to buy it all in one chunk. You can drip it in the amount you want over 3 months or 6 months or even a year. Once you purchase that stock, you might have to hold it for 2 or 3 years going forward to actually make some good returns on it. And that takes me straight on to today's takeover before I talk about the good, before we talk about the bad. So there here today, RPS got taken over by WSP at £2.06, right? We're going back to 2018, forget the year when it dropped, but it was as low as 30 pence. Yeah. Yesterday it was 117. Today it received a 76% premium offer of 206. You know, so hats off to Battlebus, who is at Battlebus 141 and at, I always get his name wrong, Simon Hedger.
Yeah.
Vodka at Vodka Quickstep. Congratulations to those two. And every other person that's held RPS for more than the last 2 years, because they've had to be so patient. The share price has gone up, it's gone down. And I know Simon's a bit of a specialist / professional in the consultancy niche in that sort of aspects of the business. So he's always got a keen eye on what's going on. And he's been talking about consolidation in that space forever. And if there's been 10 takeovers in that space, he's probably had 50% of those of the past umpteen years. And again, brilliant. A really juicy premium in that space. So that's absolutely phenomenal. Straight onto the bad, Pete.
Wait, before you do that, RPS comes back to what I've said many a time, that if you buy quality stocks with decent reputations and whatever, they can go through periods of being pretty unpleasant. But generally speaking, they will recover at some point. And you have an opportunity to average down or whatever, you know, so there's various approaches. And it comes back to what we said earlier about, do you sell on a profit warning or do you stick with it and grit your teeth? There's never an easy answer, but it just goes to show that these stocks that you think, oh, yeah, that's an absolute turkey, they can recover in you know, a couple of years, it's back where it was. So, you know.
Yeah. It's very important to know what to know the stock. I can't say this enough.
Yeah.
You know, there are far too many people still looking at who said what about that stock and then taking the consensus view on what's going on regarding that stock and then finding out to their, you know, disbelief that actually all the noise was inaccurate.
Yeah.
And then getting spanked. And that's what's happened with shares in The Works, ticker symbol WRKS.
Yeah.
Which absolutely got smashed yesterday. Online retail, like-for-like sales slumped 28% in Q1. And then they materially lowered their guidance for 2023. Yeah. But it still says it's going to reinstate its dividends. So it's sending mixed messages, but essentially the market went and the shares got smashed. Is there a buying opportunity now regarding that stock? I don't know. Anyone's considering Works, go and do your research, consider the reasons why you're buying it. And if you think it's a bargain retailer right now, I don't mean that because of what they do. I mean, bargain in the sense of the share price. Then go and do your research and consider it. But have a look and have a think about how profitable could this company be in 2024, 25, and not look for a very swift return back to the share price being at 70p or a pound, because it may take a lot longer than you think if they are struggling. You know, because the whole point is that we've got recession, people are tightening the budget. They want to buy cards or a discount book or a small gift, go to The Works. It's a discount chain. But if people aren't even going there to buy and buy online or buy in the store, then what does that tell you? Maybe they've got really, real big difficulties. I don't know.
I think it's really interesting because it's a classic thing where you think of The Works as a discounter and very much aimed at the people who don't have as much money, sort of thing. You know, it's not, you're not talking about
the lower end of the market.
You're not talking about Waterstones customers. You're talking sort of below that. But if even they are finding things tough, it sort of says a lot, really. And the other thing with Works, with what you said about online, I mean, they had a big boost with online during the pandemic. And I think this pandemic, and we've said this before, that the pandemic has distorted so much. And it was things that were true before the pandemic suddenly became not true during the pandemic. Now we're out of the pandemic. Some of the things return into what they used to be, but some of the things are different again. And it's just this idea that the markets are ever evolving. Economies are ever evolving. Politics is ever evolving. Everything's ever evolving. And it just makes our job really damn difficult.
It does. And this is the reason why I'm seeing so much across my Twitter feed at the moment regarding people saying, that's it, I'm out of stocks, I'm just buying funds. You know, I've not got the competency to deal with investing in stocks myself. That's it, I'm just buying ETFs going forward, blah, blah, blah. You know, and for some of these people, these are not just people that have been in the market 2 or 3 years, Pete. These are people that have been in the market for several years. The level of volatility we've had almost since September of last year to now has just shaken some people out. You know, I think there's more people going to be shaken out as well. I think the problem we've got is that for me, I'm an aggressive investor. But I like the pursuit, Pete. I like the research. The fact of finding something myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if it goes wrong, it's my fault. I'm taking full responsibility for when I get it wrong.
Yeah. Right?
When you've read a magazine or you've followed X, Y, and Z on Twitter, you're looking for someone to blame. You're always looking to cop out the responsibility to somebody else. It's their fault. They're ramping it all the time. Well, don't listen to the ramp then. Don't read their stuff then. You know, there's magazines, there's people on Twitter, there's people with an agenda, there's other people just sharing stuff because they want to get a feedback regarding whether or not they've got a good idea or not. But at the end of the day, you have to make your own decision as to whether you're going to put your hard-earned money in any stock. And when it goes well, you made that great call. Yeah. And I see people saying, you know, investing is a team effort on Twitter. And I'm going, really? Where are the people coming out saying sorry then when the profit warning crashes the share price by 30, 40, 50, 70% or a stock gets delisted? I don't see anyone saying, I'm sorry there, mate. I let the team down. No one, everyone disappears. Yeah.
Totally.
When is the takeover or the share price pops 30, 40, 50%? It's a team effort. You know,
let's be consistent
out there.
I think investing is a team effort in the sense of learning techniques, learning how to do things, learning better methods. I think it's a team effort in terms of identifying ideas and stocks to think about. But it certainly isn't a team effort. A team effort when it comes to actually pressing the buy button and or the sell button and you making the decision. That's the reality. And if anyone listening is blaming other people for their underperformance, they really do need to check themselves and think about what am I doing? Because that is, you know, you will never be a solid or a successful investor, a good investor, if you are continually copying ideas and just blaming other people. You know, forget all that blame game. It was you. You got it wrong, all right? You're the numpty in this case.
I'm not sure I'm going to use that word, Pete, but
I've just called our listeners numpties. Sorry, guys. Sorry about that. Oh, dear.
Right.
I shouldn't do that.
So another takeover, Pete, right?
Yeah.
So Avast, right?
Yeah.
Got written off. Basically, the UK regulators have said, nah, we're not having this. There's too much. It's going to create a problem regarding competition if they merge with Norton, basically. So from August of last year, the stocks came out with the news of the merger and the takeover from Norton, and the shares popped. And then various different entities said, we're going to clear this. We're going to clear this. The UK regulator said, nah. Competition, noise, etc. No. And the share price just drifted from £6.5 down to six, down to five and a half, down to five. And it went to sub five, down to £4.50. And I'm tracking it all that time. I'm thinking, let me see now. If they're saying basically that they want to buy this company, yeah. If they get forced not to buy Avast, maybe someone else will come in. Yeah. Maybe somebody else will come in and buy it. Then you're just waiting for Norton to get knocked out of it. So I watched it. And obviously I'd sold AstraZeneca and I've got loads of cash sitting there. I'm sitting there going, yeah, okay. Where are we now? We're on Tuesday, aren't we? So last Monday the 1st, I'd finally decided I'm going to lump a bit of money in there into Avast, right? With a view to they're going to get some news, hopefully, from the UK government. And if the UK government say, or sorry, the UK regulators say, we're not changing our mind, it's going to stay blocked, then the share price is almost back where it started, Pete, right? The sum of the parts for me was at £7.40, right? It's here available to me at £4.80, right? And I thought they could make a decision in the next couple of months, in a couple of weeks or whatever. But invariably over the next year and a half or 2 years, I'm buying, to round it up, £5 worth of value. Yeah, sorry. Oh, cost of £5 for essentially £7.50.
Yeah.
So 50%. I'll take that.
Fantastic.
And I'll wait 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, right? Last Wednesday, Bosch, the UK CMA regulators come and go, doing a U-turn here. We're going to allow the takeover to go ahead.
Wow.
Share price, wallop, up 42, 43% on the day.
Brilliant.
We're going to go ahead and let it go through. We're just going to check a few things, but essentially there's what Microsoft are doing regarding their built-in antivirus stuff. And what's going on over there? What's going on over there? We think there's enough competition going on, so we can let this go through. Yeah,
that's fantastic. And you, I mean, you didn't expect it that quick, did you? That's brilliant.
No, I was happy to wait for a year at least to get this.
Yeah.
So what I've done yesterday is basically locked that in, and that's now my 49th takeover, successful exit in 8 years, Pete. And that's, again, using some of the parts and intrinsic value. I know from my analysis of 20 years of refining it, I know within plus or minus 10% what the value is of this stock. Yeah. Right. And that's what I've been doing. And that's what's caused me to have these takeovers, more and more and more of them. Yeah. So yesterday, the share price drifted a little bit. I checked when they were due to have a trading update or an update regarding what they're doing, etc. And it was meant to be this week. I didn't know it was going to be today.
Yeah.
So I trimmed a chunk of that particular 42% off with a view to what's going on. And then I'll leave the rest and monitor it. I think at the end of the day, it finished up today. Just went up a penny, but I trimmed it at 681, and bought it at £4.78. And there's going to be more consolidation in that space as well, Pete.
Do you think the deal will go through at the current level, though?
Unless somebody comes in and says, it's a bit like when you're in the church.
Yeah,
so you're in the church, the bride and groom are there, and it says, does anyone have any reasons why these two should not be joined in holy matrimony? And you're looking around at the door going like that. So I'm hopeful, Pete, that by the end of September, there's nobody else coming out to say anything about it, and it goes out at this level. It'll probably close between 680 to 720. So there's not that much of a margin anyway.
Yeah,
really. So I could just exit it and be safe and not wait a whole year to get money out of it.
Do you think another bidder could come in?
That's a possibility. Anything's a possibility, but it's got to be a company that's either a private entity, or somebody of a similar size that wants to get into the market. It can't be one of the other behemoths, because that's the reason why this dragged for so long.
Yeah.
Because they've already got a big chunk of the actual market.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it could be somebody that's new to the market or wants to get into that space, in the antivirus space, because Microsoft are the dominant one.
But of course, we've got this advantage that US companies have, of the fact that the pound is so damn low. Yeah, the pound is so low, the dollar's so high. I mean, it's funny, it comes back to what we were saying about house builders earlier, where I think we're going to see a situation where we see overseas investment businesses buying clumps of houses in the UK to rent. I reckon we're going to see more of that.
They've been doing that for the past 5 years. I thought they're going to come and buy some of our house builders. You're spot on, because you've made a really good point there. Fantastic point. This time last year, Pete, right? You look at the US dollar versus the pound, right?
Yeah.
Morton are paying that much more, right? The dollar, right, has gone versus the pound, strengthened and strengthened and strengthened, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So now they're paying 10, 15, 20% less than that they would have done in dollars to buy Avast.
Yeah. I mean, it's great worth point. Remembering for the future when we get these chaotic situations in the general economy, is that the dollar is very much seen as a safe haven currency. So you get this flight to dollars. And I've seen that so many times in my life, and it's exactly what's playing out now. So, mate, you've done awesome on Avast. That is just an absolute beauty. Well done.
2 days, mate. 2 days. Was not expecting it. Was shocked, mate. Pure luck.
What's possible, doesn't it?
Pure luck.
Mate, I've got a question for you.
Oh, here we go.
This is a musical interlude, so don't stress yourself, right? I know you've had our day, our week, right? This is just a nice, subtle one. My question is to you. You know Muskie, Elon Musk, yeah?
Oh,
yeah, your mate, Musk, yeah, Muskie, right? How many children has Muskie got?
I'm not going to say. I'm not going to get litigated, mate.
Nah.
I'm not going to get litigated.
There's no litigation.
The lady that he's just recently split from, the musician, I can't think of her name at the moment.
No,
allegedly, she's got two children for him, but there might be more.
Well, what I read today is that he's believed to have more than 9 children. Anyway.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought that would blow your mind.
Wow.
Yeah, mad, isn't it?
9.
Imagine his food bill.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's amazing. Wow. He has time to be such a entrepreneurial genius. I mean, it's just
revelations and revelations, mate. Crikey.
It's mad things you pick up in weird places, isn't it? It's just like, what?
Yeah, that's, it is. I mean, I don't know whether to say this or not, Pete. Is he competing against Boris? Oops, I said it came out.
Oh, God, we're going to get sued twice. At least we didn't mention the Chinese or the Russians, so I'm pleased about that. We're safe.
No, you're a liability.
Don't mention the mafia.
Mate. You are a liability. Right, let's take a pause there, Pete, and tell us about the charity, mate. Back Up Trust. They've been in touch with us.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEAKS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Yeah. I want to share, whilst you're getting all your bits and pieces together, to tell us what balance we've got, because I know we've got some new donors as well, some new donations. I've got some fantastic news, folks, right? Pete and I have been contacted by the Backup Trust. There's a new lady there that's taken charge of running the aspects of fundraisers and all the rest of it. And obviously Pete and I are doing what we can for Backup. What they're going to do is they're going to send us a couple of items over. They're not going to send us. They're going to allow us to have a couple of items. So what Pete and I have decided to do after a bit of a conflap is that we're going to look at all the people that have made a donation thus far. And on the next podcast, what we're going to do is try and put all those names into a little hat or a little bowl or something or other. And we're going to get Pete to draw out a name. And even if it's anonymous, we're going to find something whereby you can identify who you are. And if you then contact Backup Trust, and we'll give you all the details for it when we draw it next week, or sorry, in 2 weeks' time, you can then identify yourself and we'll get Backup Trust to send you said item. And we're going to work out how many items we've got, and we're going to run this for a little while. And it's just our way of saying thank you to all the people that have made a donation. So each time we do the competition, everybody's name will go in the hat. So if you make a donation, you go into the hat, and you get somebody will get pulled out. We'll then get you to get in touch with Backup Trust. They will then send you directly in the post said item. I think there's T-shirts, there's cups, torch/bottle opener, which we all need a bottle opening this time of year, mate, getting a few drinks in. And we'll see what else we can get. But essentially, Excellent. It's just them saying, you know what, thank you for supporting us. Here are some things for your supporters and the kind people that have made donations to the Backup Trust. So we're just paying it forward and they're paying it forward. So thank you all for your donations and keep them coming in, and we'll hopefully draw some winners next week.
That's fantastic. So if you haven't heard the podcast before or whatever, every year we support a charity. This year we're supporting the Backup Trust. And basically we just bring to our listeners an interesting charity that perhaps me and Pete have some sort of connection to or whatever. This one we're doing this year is the Backup Trust, which is a charity to help with spinal injured people. I'm spinally injured myself. I'm a T3, third thoracic vertebrae paraplegic. And they do some great work. I mean, they do a lot of work with outward bound courses and things where, one of the big challenges with something like a life-changing injury, like a spinal injury, It's the whole sort of psychological side, the mental side, the adapting to going, you know, coming out of hospital. Because when you're in hospital, it's a really sort of safe, cushioned, cocooned environment. And then you go out into the real world and, you know, it is tough. And so they do a lot of great work on things like outward bound courses. They have things like skiing courses. They do a lot about wheelchair skills, so you can learn how to get up curbs and stuff, which you'd be amazed how often I need those to practice those skills and actually use them in my everyday life, because there aren't many drop curbs around, I'll tell you. So that's the kind of thing they do. They do some fantastic work. So if you guys, any money you can give to help them would be fantastic. They've got a Just Giving page. I'll give you the address for it. That's www.justgiving.com/fundraising/TwinPeaks. There's also a link on my website, my Wheelie Dealer 2 website. You go to the podcast tab, and right at the top, there's a link to the backup trusting. If you can't find it, DM me or whatever on Twitter, or DM Pete, whatever. You know, we'll sort it out. I just wanted to say we had some donations come through last week, so thank you to those people. I'll read you some in a minute. Our total now, we're just under 2,000 quid, so we're coming along nicely.
How short are we, Pete?
Well, we're about 61 quid short of 2 grand, so we're nearly there.
Okay,
which is fantastic. So we're on £1,939 been raised so far by 49 cool supporters. So thank you, everybody. It's fantastic. If we haven't named you individually on the thing, sorry to be so remiss. But this week we will mention the following people: our mate Faisal, good chap, excellent calls and effort, gents. Nice donation there, thanks, mate. Eclectic Trends. He's given us a lovely gift, 100 quid and 25 quid gift aid. So fantastic.
Nice one. Thank you ever so much.
Whoever you are, Eclectic Trend, you are a ledge. What it says is, thanks for all your time and energy you give the investment community. Fantastic. Thanks, mate. It's brilliant.
Lovely.
Got another one then. I don't know what's going on here because it's almost, I don't know if it's a spelling mistake or what, but it's got Michael VW. But the V is small, so I don't know if that means he drives a Golf or a Passat or something. I haven't quite worked it out. So wherever you are, Michael, fantastic. Lovely donation there. Love your podcast. I'm new to investing, and your down-to-earth conversations are very helpful and great fun. Keep up the great work. Mate, I really appreciate that, Michael. That is just awesome. And I'd love to see you golf one day, mate. Fantastic.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. We had some fantastic feedback, and want to thank all of you, ladies and gents, that have enjoyed the podcasts that we've done recently with our guests and without our guests. And bizarrely, even some of our guests have said they prefer when it's just you and I, Pete. And I'm like, what? And we're saying that the last podcast, number 80, was one of the best ones we've done of late, and it was really good. It was nice flow. It was, you know, it was just a really, really, really good podcast. I'm thinking, okay, what was so different? But we'll take that. We'll take that. You know what I mean? It's thank better you than when people are going, so thank you all for your feedback. As always, with every podcast that we do, the feedback we get for each one, I write up, and it's usually on the first link that goes on my website. All the feedback we've got, or most of the feedback we've got, good, bad, or indifferent, I write it up, and it's there with the person's name on it as to what they've said. So that's just my way of saying thank you to everybody that's come back and said they enjoyed it. Because, you know, we're having 2.5, well, it's summer now, so we're down a little bit. We're getting 2,500 listens per podcast, and we get 20, 30 people writing and tweeting about it and resharing it and so on and so forth. So, you know, if we can get some more people that haven't in the past commented about it, we'd love to hear from you. If you've enjoyed them historically, then please just retweet it. Please subscribe to whichever podcast platforms you're on, and just say something to Pete or I on Twitter, and between the both of us, we'll probably find your tweet and reply to you and just say thank you about it. Because the beauty of what we're trying to do here, and we keep saying this on each podcast, it's about education. We're not on here to ramp the stocks that Pete owns or that I own. Yeah. We're trying to get people to think about the market, not get shaken out of stocks, have a look at why things may be going wrong in the market regarding the macro and also with regards to the micro regarding individual stocks. So I think the important thing that we've discovered over the past probably 9 months, actually, is that there are more people thinking longer term now. So some people have taken money out and going, right, okay, I'm going to be cautious for a little while, but I'll be back. And other people have gone, I'm changing my strategy slightly. And that's a good thing. I think some people sometimes get fixed on, I'm owning this stock and I'm going to own it forever.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's a good attitude to have. But as Pete said earlier, markets change. Yeah. And the macroeconomics of that particular company has been impacted. So be mindful of thinking that this stock can only go up. And because it was at £5 per share and it's now at £1 a share, it's obviously going to go back to £5 a share. It's not guaranteed because, you know, the foundations have been changed from underneath the company.
Oh, absolutely.
Pete, have you got another stock, mate? I'm conscious that we're nearly coming up to the hour mark.
Yeah, with the time, mate, I'm going to cheat and whack two stocks in very fast. So the first one I won't dwell on. That is, I think it's Kinetic, QQ dot. It's a defense company. I hold BAE Systems myself, BA dot. So I probably won't buy QQ dot myself. But I think it's a really interesting stock. The valuation looks sort of sensible. I think it's on a forward PE of 17, 18, those kind of levels. I believe it's got net cash or a very tiny amount of debt, if it has got any debt. It's a £2 billion company. It used to be owned by the UK government and was spun out something like, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago. It was spun out or whatever. Anyway. The point is, it specializes in more the electronics and the technology and the computing and the consultancy side of defense. It's not so much about making missiles and bombs and all that kind of stuff. But I think where it gets really interesting and what makes it something that could do well as something to buy it and just tuck it away. Obviously, it's going to be a lot more defense spending because of the problems with Russia and now China and Taiwan and everything else. You know, defense spending is going to be buoyant. They've already started doing stuff in Germany, and I think there's scope to do more in Germany. Mm-hmm. And they've also today announced a contract, something like $45 million in America. And they're looking to do more stuff in America, which is obviously where I was looking at some figures
big
today.
Contracts can be won, yeah.
America is something like, say, $700 billion of defense spending a year, whereas even China is only like $240 billion. So you know, the scale of the US spend absolutely dwarfs everything. I was quite stunned. I've always knew the US military was big, but I thought, goodness me, that is immense. So for a company like Kinetic, that's only 2 billion market cap, you know, that could easily be swallowed up by an American player or by even BAE Systems, maybe, I'm thinking. So, you know, I think it's an interesting one, a little bit of dividend, probably about 2.8%, something like that, dividend. Interesting stuff.
The bit in the middle there, Pete, is that it was only at the weekend it came out and said it was buying, what was the name of it? Avantus Federal for $590 million, which is $487 million. Yeah. Pounds.
Yep.
So $590 million, £487 was going to buy Avantis. So that's got them really deep in embedded into the US. Great. That's a big chunky purchase for them. And the day later, or a couple of days later, they get that already an order in the US.
Yeah.
So that's quite good.
It's an interesting one to look at. I don't know what happened with the technology there. You seem to freeze a bit, but hey, let's.
Yeah, it's fading. I think it's running on fumes, mate. So
we'll crack on.
I've got you've got one more, and I've got one more to share with you when you're finished.
Do you want to do yours, or shall I do the other one?
I'll quickly throw this one here, and this might sound like a contrary sort of stock to use right now? Because we're talking about an engineering company, and we know all engineering companies have high energy costs, Pete. Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, I'm going to do my Jamaican pronunciation of this. Vesuvius. V-S-V-S. Is that the right way you say it, Pete?
Yeah, Vesuvius. Yeah,
I'll go for that. So it's a molten metal flow engineering group, Pete. And it came out last month with really good full-year numbers at the top of the forecast range. And the stock jumped, but it's still down year-to-date. And I just thought, as a FTSE 250 company, basically looking at what is going on, trading range is going to be going up. Seems to be doing really, really well.
Yeah.
But because it's an engineer already all year long, they've been going bang, 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 banging that stock down. And I think this particular sort of movement, going back to the latter part of July, basically, you know, looking at what the lows were of 280 odd in July, I think, and lots of people like to call the bottoms in stock, and it is almost like you do that at your risk. Yeah. I'm not going to say that it's at the bottom, but that was a low, right? And the share price is is above £3 now, going towards £3.50. It's a stock to keep an eye on. If they've already done well in the first half of the year, can they maintain that trajectory? Can they keep regarding their input costs and energy costs? So that's just one of what people, as I always do on this, and Pete and I do on here, is to just say, keep an eye on that sort of stock and have a look at where it is when the market's a bit more positive, and keep an eye on the share price, because it might be worth researching now. Add to your watch list. And when the market's a little bit more positive, the share price may be even lower than where it was in July. It may be higher. But if they can do well during all this flux, maybe they can do even better when the markets are positive.
Yeah, Vesuvius is an interesting one, because I think that used to be part of Cookson. Cookson's that enormous industrial...
I remember Cookson. Don't remember them. Yeah. Could be.
Yeah, and I think Cookson used to be a load of electronics components in one division of the company, and the other division was Vesuvius, and they split up, and I can't remember what happened to the electronics bit. I think it might have got sold off, but anyway, that's all ancient history. But yeah, Vesuvius, I mean, yeah, who knows, it could be a good one. I think the thing with VSVS is it could be very cyclical, you know, because it's very much about foundries, steel production, iron production, all this kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
It can be quite a cyclical market, and if the UK goes into recession and all the usual things we talk about.
The
stock I wanted to mention, I need to give a big shout out here to Michael T. Yeah, he's on Twitter as Michael T. I can't remember, it's Michael and a load of numbers, I think, is his Twitter handle. He's been, you know, screaming out about load, LOAD, Crest Chip. Yep. He's been Crest shouting chip, yep. about them for years. He's held it for years. It used to be NBI, Northbridge Industrial.
Yeah.
Basically, they do load banks, hence the name load, which are really just like little generators and stuff. But they traditionally were very much in energy and mining, supplying sort of power units for those, but they've been really doing well recently for data centers, and that's where they're getting a lot of the growth from. Anyway, this year, they have upgraded their guidance 3 times in a year, which is just absolutely stunning. They've jumped 24% today. The interesting thing that I've found, and it links to a conversation we were having earlier, where what seems to happen is when a company exceeds expectations like this, you get a jump, and then quite often they drift upwards afterwards, and they can keep rising. And it's a bit like the converse, where you get a profit warning and then they drift down afterwards. And it's almost like the two sides of the same coin. But Michael's done absolutely awesome on load. I think there probably is still upside in load, even after 24% jump today. If I held it, I'd definitely keep on holding it. If I didn't hold it, I don't have it. but it's certainly something I would look at as a potential buy, even with all the jump so far. And what I keep saying is their demand is accelerating. It's that word accelerating. And I know Jason at Stealth Stuff loves the word accelerating. And you know, this one totally fills the bill on that.
Yeah, I think that the beauty of what the it's that niche that they're in, Pete. If the demand is there, and the continuity of demand is there, and it's not something that people can actually go, we don't need that anymore. We're going to stop. We're going to delay. Mm. Then you're in a winning niche. I think the important thing there is has been touched on. I keep saying to people to try and nudge them over to have a listen to the Investing Matters podcast. Interviewed a fantastic lady called Janet Moy, the head of market analysis, and she's an economist at Brewing Dolphin. So you can find that on the Investing Matters links that I put out, and also on London Southeast. Absolutely phenomenal. And she's talking about the companies to actually look at, to consider and plan and organize and invest in. So that's a really, really good interview. But I think the point that she made, Pete, which is quite important, is that sometimes when you do your research, you have to consider, and it goes back to what we were saying earlier, the macroeconomics and the niche that these companies are in. The stronger the niche, the longer the trend. And essentially what you've got a situation now with Load is that they're going to be in a situation where it doesn't really matter what's going on around them. They're going like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So as you say, the momentum is there. And I think some people are going to have obviously chased that this morning. They've seen the results. Its share price is moving and gone, wallop, wallop, wallop. I'm going to chase that as well. I wouldn't particularly chase it. If I wasn't in it, I wouldn't go buying it now. For those that are already in it, absolutely smashed it. Well done. And Michael, again, he's done his research. He's been patient with it. And he does that. He does that regularly. And the beauty about what Michael T does and a few others do is that it's their research, Pete.
Yeah.
It's their research. You know, it's not been tipped by over there. It's not been tipped by that person over there. It's not been chatted and ramped by X, Y, and Z over there. They've done the research and it's theirs alone. You know, so that has to be respected. And I think that's the beauty. I think the most successful people that I know on Twitter are people that do stuff in isolation, not the crews, not the cliques, not the people that are all in the same chat room. It's the independent thinkers that always do better.
Totally, totally. Well, mate, I think we need to draw a close to it there.
We'll draw a close there. We've already done another 70 minute plus, if not longer. Once again, I just want to thank everyone that supported this particular podcast. Pete and I, as you know, I've been working on it for some time. There's a lot of hours goes into putting this stuff together. You've seen Pete now for the last hour and a bit on this particular one. And then there's still another 30 hours of work to be done. So we thank you all for your support. We'll continue doing these for as long as we can, as long as we've got the energy. We're trying to take some of the load off Pete because of his health. So that's one of the reasons why we've had some frequent guests. So we're going to try and keep that together going forward. The lady that was trying to get on here is on holiday at the moment. So we'll try and get her on another time. And other guests will be coming on going forward. But I just want to thank you all again for all of your support. Please do what you can in your communities. Have a think about the fact that lots of people in and around you are going to be struggling financially with their heating and financially with food. So do what you can, support the food banks and any charities and churches that you're nearby to, and look after yourself. Have a look at your neighbours. Have a think about who in and around where you are could do with some help, or just a look into, knock on the door, how are you? And just say hello to them. You know, let's do what we can for each other. All right. Take care. God bless.
Thanks, everyone.
Stay safe.
Cheers.
Bye-bye for now. Bye-bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.